health workers are asking us, what are you, the Joint Commission, doing? And decarbonization and sustainability is really critical to a health agenda, especially because climate change is having not only a direct and inequitable impact on health, but also on health equity globally. And there are three things that I think are worth knowing, learned this in my work with the National Academies of Medicine. First, if healthcare were a country, it would be the fifth worst polluter worldwide. Think about that. Worldwide healthcare equals approximately the top five other countries in terms of the impact on climate. And that said, the United States alone is responsible for over a quarter of worldwide healthcare emissions.
Welcome to A&M Healthcare Industry Group's What's Your Moonshot podcast series, where world-class healthcare leaders seek to solve big problems. Listen as we talk to today's health system CEOs about the journey to achieve their moonshots.
Welcome to A&M's What's Your Moonshot podcast. I'm Larry Kaiser, Managing Director in Alvarez & Marsal's Healthcare Industry Group. I'm joined by my co-host, the ninth Secretary of the Veterans Administration, the Honorable Dr. David Shulkin. David, we're incredibly fortunate today to welcome the President and Chief Executive Officer of the Joint Commission, Dr. Jonathan Perlin. Dr. Perlin became the seventh President and CEO of the Joint Commission on March 1st, 2022, joining its mission to continuously improve healthcare for the public by evaluating healthcare organizations and inspiring them to excel in providing safe and effective care of the highest quality and value. Dr. Perlin was previously President, Clinical Operations and Chief Medical Officer at HCA Healthcare, where he led clinicians, data scientists, and researchers in developing a learning health system model for improving care at the system's 185 hospitals and 2,200 other locations. His team's work achieved national recognition for preventing elective preterm deliveries, reducing maternal mortality, increasing sepsis survival, and developing public-private academic partnerships for improving infection prevention and treating COVID. Before HCA, Dr. Perlin was Undersecretary for Health in the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, where he led the Veterans Health Administration to national prominence for clinical performance. Dr. Perlin, we are very pleased to welcome you to the podcast today.
It's a delight to be here with you, Dr. Kaiser, and Secretary Shulkin. Thank you both for having me here today.
Great. Well, Jonathan, we can't think of a better guest to have on the What's Your Moonshot podcast. You're what I call the trifecta. You've worked in not-for-profit healthcare, for-profit healthcare, government, and now in one of the nation's most important organizations overseeing quality. So you have the real opportunity to share thoughts across just many different landscapes in healthcare. And I know in your new role at Joint Commission, or at least I still call it a new role, you've been there a while now, I know. You, I am sure, have some pretty big goals for the organizations and sort of what we call moonshots, and what the Joint Commission does affects the rest of us in healthcare. And so do you want to tell us a little bit about what some of those big goals might be for the Joint Commission?
Absolutely. And first, I want to just thank you for your terrific leadership, and Larry as well. You both had an extraordinary impact on improving healthcare. Really, that's what our team hopes to do at the Joint Commission. I've been there about 10 months. And today's Joint Commission is really about three things: inspiration, improvement, and accountability. And to just describe those in that order, I don't know that everyone realizes why the Joint Commission is called the Joint Commission, but it really ties to the inspiration that came from within healthcare medical practice itself. The Joint Commission's predecessor organization followed in the wake of Ernest Codman's work in quality and the Flexner Report on science-driven medicine. And in fact, its predecessor organization was started by the American College of Surgeons to assure that hospitals have the capacity to offer safe and effective medical care. And the American College of Surgeons actually continued inspecting hospitals through World War II. But as you might imagine, during World War II, physicians were drafted. Prior to World War II, most hospitals were run by physicians. So with the advent of the Second World War came the ascension of non-physician professional hospital management. And the depleted physician ranks meant that the American College of Surgeons sought to share the responsibility of reviewing hospitals with others. So jointly, with the American Medical Association, American College of Physicians, the American Dental Association, the American Hospital Association, American College of Surgeons, a new entity was chartered, and that was the Joint Commission about 75 years ago. And its goal was to inspire and improve. Since starting at the Joint Commission, I've taken, as you might expect, a pretty hands-on approach. I've actually been on two full surveys, start to finish, opening conference to exit conference. And I got to tell you, I learned a lot. First, I observed that the surveyors were excellent. They weren't the surveyors of yesteryear. They were up to date. They were caring. They were respectful. And I observed that they balanced education and collaboration with accountability. And the phrase that I heard most frequently to test a concept was show me. You know, I had never attended an entire survey start to finish on the receiving end, but I learned a lot. You really see the interconnection of the standards and the subordinate elements of performance, and this allows a synthetic view of performance to emerge. And this is really quite true for things like fire safety, where a miss here or there may be minor, but a bunch of small misses together create risk for catastrophe. So I'm using my operational experience and that hands-on approach to really calibrate the accreditation and survey process to be more critical, compelling, and address the most durable issues. And I believe this is the best way for the Joint Commission to honor its mission to continuously improve healthcare.
I can only say that when you showed up for one of those surveys, the place being surveyed had to, the anxiety level must have increased somewhat. So, but John, we're pressed to learn that your moonshot's not focused on one major challenge in healthcare, but on three of the biggest issues that are facing healthcare organizations today. Describe your top three strategic priorities and how they roll together into your moonshot, if you would.
Well, Larry, the very top of my agenda are health equity, environmental sustainability, and workforce. And workforce, both in terms of the new models of care and, frankly, the sustainability of the workforce itself. These three issues are absolutely at the pinnacle of relevance to improved healthcare. And they're also at the pinnacle of major societal issues. So I've been accelerating the focus on each of these priority areas, and I'm pleased to report that we're already making progress.
John, how can the Joint Commission impact health equity? We hear from leaders all over that this is an important goal, and I think all of us want to decrease the disparities that we see in healthcare. But will the Joint Commission begin to start building standards into its surveys to look for health equity? Will it begin measurement processes? How can the Joint Commission begin to impact something like that?
Well, the premise of your question, David, is exactly right. And as an organization, we're operating under the belief that equity must be the foundation for all that we do in healthcare. Without equity, even the opportunity for safe care cannot, frankly, will not exist. We believe that reducing healthcare disparities is not only a quality and patient safety imperative, but also our moral and ethical duty. In the words of Martin Luther King, of all the forms of inequality, injustice in healthcare is the most shocking and inhuman. And so with those words in mind and appreciative of the exacerbation of disparities in the wake of COVID, Joint Commission's new healthcare equity accreditation requirements actually went into effect January 1st of this month. Yeah. We want to equip our healthcare organizations that we accredit with the resources and tools to most effectively meet the new requirements. Most importantly, we believe that these requirements will help healthcare organizations provide care that's of high quality and equitable. And so the new elements of performance include some things that go in a slightly different direction than some might anticipate. They require designating a leader on the executive team, assessing health-related social needs, a term that we use, some would call social determinants of health, but we think that's clearer and more accessible, stratifying quality and safety data, creating an action plan, evaluating that plan's effectiveness, and keeping stakeholders informed. And I mentioned these standards go in a slightly different direction. They're directional. We're not saying focus on transportation to care or food adequacy or maternal mortality, though each of these are incredibly important and formidable challenges. We're asking the systems to look at their data and identify the most pressing opportunities in their context and take the actions that they think are appropriate. And this directional approach also means that we'll be communicating through data. And that's really the direction we want to head: evidence-based, data-driven, and outcomes-oriented. We'll be elevating the healthcare equity standards to be a national patient safety goal effective July 1st, 2023. We also appreciate that healthcare organizations are really at different points along their healthcare equity journey, and that that road is not always smooth. It's paved with many challenges. So our goal is to meet organizations wherever they are and support them with appropriate resources. And that really gets back to the words I tried to use at the beginning that characterize the mission of the Joint Commission: inspiration, improvement, and accountability.
I think you said, John, that there must be tremendous variability in where organizations are on that journey, and also probably where each organization sets its bar. And I think this is an important step of measurement of setting the goals. But just give us a sense about where you think the average hospital is in this journey. If there was a scale of 1 to 10, 1 at the beginning of the journey and 10 achieving full elimination of disparities, where are we average across the country?
I think we really need humility on this question, is that I'd like to say we're in the upper half scale, but we're not. We're at the lower end of that scale. And I think the wake-up call, at least for me, was that I know in my past experiences, we made progress in the area we focused on, but I feel unfortunately accurate in the prediction that when hospitals stratify their data, and I don't care what the data are, take any of the data on healthcare processes or outcomes, be it patient experience or infection rates, et cetera, when they stratify by race, ethnicity, language, payer status, not just zip code. Zip code's not very sensitive, but area code, the deprivation index, block code, et cetera, census tract block codes, disease state, sexual orientation, gender identity, it almost doesn't matter. But you will find surprises. In my past, I found surprises in those data that even adjusting for comorbidities, you just can't account for. So I think we have tremendous opportunity.
John, I just have to ask you on that, given your leadership and involvement in the Department of Veteran Affairs and my background there too, do you think the VA has done a better job at this than most?
I think there are a number of reasons the VA has actually done a much better job than the most. First, the VA has been more culturally diverse in terms of service members for a long time. Second, some of the challenges in women's health and the military have led to an intense focus on equity and gender-related care. The health services research and the long history of an electronic health record have allowed not only the stratification of data, but the ability to set targets and make progress. So I'd thank you and other leaders for the progress that's been made. There's a great deal to be learned there.
You know, John, you touched on it a little bit earlier, but another major challenge that has become even more critical with more attention focused on it is workforce management, specifically burnout, that we've really seen experience tremendously in the last few years. What are some strategies you're working on to assist organizations with this now and in the future? And clearly, organizations themselves are working on this as well.
Yes, Larry. When I speak with healthcare leaders, the top three issues on their set of challenges and agenda are workforce and health equity and environmental sustainability. But the operational challenge right now is around workforce. And as we know, the increased demand for healthcare during the pandemic, along with the increased strains on the health professionals themselves, exacerbated what were already existing stresses, contributed to the great resignation in healthcare. And we're grappling today with an unprecedented staffing shortage. And the results of this staffing shortage can be visualized, at least the way I visualize it, is as a three-way collision that pits the interest of the patient against the interest of the community, against the interest of the healthcare workers themselves. And each deserves the best. Patients deserve safe, high-quality care. Communities need access to a full range of health services, and healthcare workers deserve a safe and healthy working environment. And I learned a term in systems thinking called multi-solving. You can't solve for one without solving for the others. And staffing is an incredibly complex issue. It's not even easy for airlines, and we're talking about something like healthcare, where there are myriad more specialties. But there's no one solution to easily fix it. It can't be resolved by a singular entity. But we can all agree that the pandemic has brought crucial attention to the need for more trained healthcare workers to meet the demand of patients and reduce turnover. But what Joint Commission is doing is, I think, important. And we want to do something right now. As you may have heard, on January 1st of this year, we announced that we have now eliminated 168 standards, 14%, and are revising a number of other standards across our accreditation programs to streamline the requirements and make the requirements as efficient and, importantly, as impactful as possible on patient safety, quality, and equity. Standards will help us provide some much needed relief to healthcare professionals and organizations as they continue to recover from the effects of the pandemic. Our goal is to eliminate any standard that no longer adds value. We want to have fewer but more meaningful requirements that better support safer, higher quality, and more equitable health outcomes. And something else that we announced as well, additionally, to provide financial relief to hospitals and health systems, Joint Commission announced that we would not raise domestic hospital accreditation fees in 2023. And candidly, as a result, some of our surveys are being conducted for less than cost. But these standards reductions and accreditation fees result from our comprehensive review that we announced in September. We reviewed all of what we call the above and beyond requirements, those that go beyond the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, or CMS, conditions of participation. And it's worth noting that standards emanate from two sources. CMS and other regulatory requirements prescribe some of the standards that have to be met. And then the Joint Commission itself, based on input from its joint partners, AHA, AMA, ACP, ACS, ADA, also recommend other standards. So there have been a lot of standards, really been evaluating them, and we'll continue to review with a second tranche of standards under consideration right now for elimination or revision, with the intent to announce that on July 1st. And for every 6 months, we'll repeat this process to make sure that any requirements that we, the Joint Commission Above and Beyond Standards, offer still address the most critical quality and safety issues. And we'll assess to see whether the standard is redundant with other standards, whether the time and resources needed to comply with the requirement are commensurate with the estimated benefit to patient care and health outcomes. But in short, our goal is to reduce the burden on an already overburdened set of healthcare workers and institutions. We believe this needed standards review and standards elimination and accreditation fee freeze will lessen the staff burden and allow for greater focus on measures that truly move the needle toward higher level healthcare performance. And those higher level healthcare performance activities will be focused very directly on healthcare equity, workforce, and environmental sustainability. And as I mentioned, we'll be moving much more toward evidence-based, data-driven, and outcomes-oriented. So that dialogue is around data and really, we believe, helps to build the performance excellence into, as they say, woodwork.
Yeah, John, I think that's terrific. You've mentioned a couple times this focus on environmental sustainability. And I think that that's one that surprises a lot of people because they say, well, what's the Joint Commission involved with something like that? And is that really an issue that is critical to hospitals and health systems? And so can you talk a little bit about why that's risen to the top of your priority lists?
Sure, David. And first of all, I'll share an anecdote is that I think it's unbelievably rare, if not unprecedented, that health workers, particularly younger ones, ask for new standards. That's almost an unprecedented experience. But in the area of healthcare equity and environmental sustainability, health workers are asking us, what are you, the Joint Commission, doing? And decarbonization and sustainability is really critical to a health agenda, especially because climate change is having not only a direct and inequitable impact on health, but also on health equity globally. And there are three things that I think are worth knowing. I learned this in my work with the National Academies of Medicine. First, if healthcare were a country, it would be the fifth worst polluter worldwide. Mm. Think about that. Worldwide healthcare equals approximately the top five other countries in terms of the impact on climate. And that said, the United States alone is responsible for over a quarter of worldwide healthcare emissions. Wow. Second, as I mentioned, climate change is a health issue. It exacerbates heart and respiratory diseases, as we know, but it adds to waterborne diseases and even deprives others of clean water. And as I mentioned, it's a health equity issue. Point three, as those with the fewest resources are really least able to compensate for its effects. They can't buy their way out of heat or cold or access to water. And, you know, we've seen at a national level the impacts of this, again, exacerbated by COVID. What we've done at Joint Commission is to convene two panels. Some include some of our strongest critics. So the first panel really is looking at the proactive. What standards can we create that encourage health systems to address reducing their carbon footprint? And frankly, most of the carbon footprint is not from what we do, though what we do is about 7%. Chlorinated anesthetics and propellants and meter dose inhalers are almost the entirety. And you can use dry inhalers, and even cutting the flow rate of fluorinated anesthetics not only reduces emissions, but it also saves money. About 11, 12% is the stuff we burn for the powering of our buildings and our vehicles. But 82% is the stuff we buy. And so our second panel, even though we've scrubbed our standards that don't say use, single use, et cetera, the second panel includes people who have been very critical and say inadvertently some of your standards may drive excess consumption. And so this panel is helping us really scrub not only the standards, but the language to make sure that we don't inadvertently contribute. And they say at Microsoft, you have to eat your own dog food, use your own tools. I'm pleased to report that the Joint Commission in July of last year signed the White House Climate Pledge to reduce carbon emissions by 50% by 2030 and net zero by 2050. These, by the way, degrees of reducing emissions are what worldwide scientists feel are necessary to take us back to a carbon level that over the last million years has allowed the Earth to recover to a temperate climate. So we believe this is an issue that healthcare has to have ownership for, that one socially important in terms of the effect on health and health equity. And we'll meet this again with directional standards so that each health system can really determine the best opportunities in their particular context.
So your focus on quality and safety for patients obviously is critical and is really the basis under which the Joint Commission operates. What lessons would you share with healthcare leaders trying to ensure patient safety and quality in their own organizations? And obviously, it's a focus in every institution. I like to say that we've always been concerned about quality, but only in fairly recent years has it really risen to the top where it is really the focus of our discussions. So comment a little bit about what other leaders can do.
It's really not enough to know. We have to move to action. Passion for change has to meet action. And one of the mantras I've believed across my entire career is that good quality is good business. And so as we embrace these opportunities, we actually offer better care. And so I guess in summary, the most important lesson I'd share is that we honor principles of the Joint Commission's vision in our day-to-day activities. And I believe that this is a vision that all of us in healthcare share, providing patients with the safest, highest quality, best value healthcare across all healthcare settings. That's a statement that's, those are the words of our vision. And while they don't use the word equity, they include the operationalization of equity, all patients across all healthcare settings. It's been a privilege to be here with you today and want to thank all of those in healthcare for their commitment to the principles of the vision. And we look forward to working with colleagues like the two of you, our member organizations, the policy community, and frontline healthcare workers to continue on this journey of improving safety, equity, and quality for all.
I think the other thing is higher quality usually associated with less cost as well. So there's no question that if you can maintain and build the quality, costs do tend to decrease. So that's another area that obviously we're all concerned about cost.
John, thank you so much for spending the time with us today. I think everyone who listens is going to learn something that's really happening at the Joint Commission and where I think your leadership is bringing this and the influence it's going to have on the whole healthcare system. And we're extremely grateful for that leadership and for your time with us today.
Been a privilege, David and Larry. Thank you both for your leadership. I know we share a passion for this mission.
Yes, indeed. And John, again, let me add my thanks to you as well. It's been incredibly valuable. And the work that you and your colleagues at the Joint Commission do really is allowing our healthcare system to continue to improve. We have a ways to go, but hopefully under your leadership, we'll continue to improve. Thank you again.
Alvarez and Marcel, leadership, action, results.
Well, I thought that was interesting. He's clearly trying to bring some new thinking into the Joint Commission. And quite frankly, I think it's a very positive direction. Whenever you hear somebody say that they're eliminating standards and not raising prices, you know that he's spending time listening.
Yeah, I think under John, they really have focused on areas that are really important, not just running through a list of these, you know, all these standards that they have. Not that any of these standards weren't valuable, but when he said they've eliminated 168 of them or something like that, it's very impressive. So he really is focusing in on those areas, I think, that are so critically important. And again, his focus on equity, I think, and putting that out as a standard, which I know was just announced recently, I think also is huge. I think the academic institutions are perhaps further along than the hospitals and health systems are in terms of equity. So I think the hospitals are going to have to catch up. And certainly with the Joint Commission pushing that, I think there's a ways to go, as he pointed out, but I think we're on the way. And as you pointed out, the VA has sort of been on that mission for a long time, primarily because of the diversity within the VA population.
Yeah, I think what John brings to the table really is that perspective, having seen this in the VA, but also watching, as you said, how HCA has really so successfully been able to turn quality into a business strategy by lowering costs, keeping profitability. And so he brings those things to the table. And I think that's what we're beginning to see in his leadership at the Joint Commission.
Yeah. Well, anyway, it was great talking to John. I mean, he had the same job at the VA that you did, your first job at the VA, correct?
Right.
Yeah,
and,
yeah,
you know, the nice thing about John, he's totally committed to the mission. When the wait time crisis happened in 2014, that led to the resignation of the secretary at the time and the former undersecretary, John took leave from his job at HCA to come back and to step in VA until I could be appointed. And his leadership and his steady hand was always appreciated at VA.
Yeah. Well, he's a very impressive guy, and I think the Joint Commission really is redefining itself under his leadership. So I think it was great to have him today, and I think he really adds to our lineup on the podcast.